Inasmuch as the heat would have cajoled and allured the pitch, even so the soul that is hot with desire for any creature draws forth foulness from it through the heat of its desire and is stained by it. And there is more difference between the soul and other corporeal creatures than between a liquid that is highly clarified and mud that is most foul. Wherefore, even as such a liquid would be defiled if it were mingled with mud, so is the soul defiled that clings to creatures. Since by doing this it becomes like to the said creatures, and in the same way that traces of soot would defile a face that is very lovely and perfect, even in this way do disordered desires befoul and defile the soul that has them. The which soul is in itself a most lovely and perfect image of God. Wherefore, Jeremiah, lamenting the ravages of foulness which these disordered affections cause in the soul, speaks first of its beauty and then of its foulness, saying, "Its hair, that is to say, that of the soul, is more excellent in whiteness than in snow, clearer than milk, and ruddier than old ivory, and lovelier than the sapphire stone. Their face has now become blacker than coal, and they are not known in the streets. By the hair we are to understand the affections and thoughts of the soul, which, ordered as God orders them, that is, in God Himself, are whiter than snow, and clearer than milk, and ruddier than ivory, and lovelier than the sapphire. By these four things is understood every kind of beauty and excellence of corporeal creatures, higher than which, says the writer, are the soul and its operations, which are the Nazarites, or the hair aforementioned, the which Nazarites, being unruly, with their lives ordered in a way that God ordered not, that is, being set upon the creatures, have their face, says Jeremiah, made and turned blacker than coal. All this harm and more is done to the beauty of the soul by its unruly desires for the things of this world, so much so that, if we set out to speak of the foul and vile appearance that the desires can give the soul, we should find nothing. However full of cobwebs and worms it might be, not even the corruption of a dead body, nor aught else that is impure and vile, nor aught that can exist and be imagined in this life, to which we could compare it. For although it is true that the unruly soul in its natural being is as perfect as when God created it, yet in its reasonable being it is vile, abominable, foul, black, and full of all the evils that are here being described, and many more. For as we shall afterwards say, a single unruly desire, although there be in it no matter of mortal sin, suffices to bring a soul into such bondage, foulness, and vileness that it can in no wise come to accord with God in union until the desire be purified. What then will be the vileness of the soul that is completely unrestrained with respect to its own passions and given up to its desires? And how far removed will it be from God and from His purity? It is impossible to explain in words or to cause to be understood by the understanding what variety of impurity is caused in the soul by a variety of desires. For if it could be expressed and understood, it would be a wondrous thing, and one also which would fill us with pity to see how each desire, in accordance with its quality and degree, be it greater or smaller, leaves in the soul its mark and deposit of impurity and vileness, and how one single disorder of the reason can be the source of innumerable different impurities, some greater and some less, each one after its kind. For even as the soul of the righteous man has in one single perfection, which is uprightness of soul, innumerable gifts of the greatest richness, and many virtues of the greatest loveliness, each one different and full of grace after its kind, according to the multitude and the diversity of the affections of love which it has had in God. Even so the unruly soul, according to the variety of the desires which it has for the creatures, has in itself a miserable variety of impurities and meanness wherewith it is endowed by the said desires. The variety of these desires is well illustrated in the book of Ezekiel, where it is written that God showed this prophet in the interior of the temple, painted around its walls all likenesses of creeping things which crawl on the ground, and all the abomination of unclean beasts. And then God said to Ezekiel, "Son of man, hast thou not indeed seen the abominations that these do, each one in the secrecy of his chamber?" And God commanded the prophet to go in farther, and he would see greater abominations. And he says that he there saw women seated, weeping for Adonis, the god of love. And God commanded him to go in farther still, and he would see yet greater abominations. And he says that he saw there 25 old men whose backs were turned toward the temple. The diversity of creeping things and unclean beasts that were painted in the first chamber of the temple are the thoughts and the conceptions which the understanding fashions from the lowly things of earth and from all the creatures which are painted just as they are in the temple of the soul, when the soul embarrasses its understanding with them, which is the soul's first habitation. The women that were farther within, in the second habitation, weeping for the god Adonis, are the desires that are in the second faculty of the soul, which is the will, the which are, as it were, weeping, inasmuch as they covet that to which the will is affectioned, which are the creeping things painted in the understandings. And the men that were in the third habitation are the images and the representations of the creatures, which the third part of the soul, namely memory, keeps and reflects upon within itself. Of these it is said that their backs are turned toward the temple, because when the soul, according to these three faculties, completely and perfectly embraces anything that is of the earth, it can be said to have its back turned toward the temple of God, which is the right reason of the soul, which admits within itself nothing that is of creatures. And let this now suffice for the understanding of this foul disorder of the soul, with respect to its desires. For if we had to treat in detail of the lesser foulness which these imperfections and their variety make and cause in the soul, and that which is caused by venial sins, which is still greater than that of the imperfections, and their great variety, and likewise that which is caused by the desires for mortal sin, which is complete foulness of the soul, and its great variety, according to the variety and the multitude of all these three things, we should never end, nor would the understanding of angels suffice to understand it. That which I say, and that which is to the point for my purpose, is that any desire, although it be for but the smallest imperfection, stains and defiles the soul. Chapter 10, wherein is described how the desires weaken the soul in virtue and make it lukewarm. The fifth way in which the desires harm the soul is by making it lukewarm and weak, so that it has no strength to follow after virtue and to persevere therein. For as the strength of the desire, when it is set upon various aims, is less than if it were wholly on one thing alone, and as the more are the aims whereon it is set, the less of it there is for each of them. For this cause, philosophers say that virtue in union is stronger than if it is dispersed. Wherefore, it is clear that, if the desire of the will be dispersed among other things than virtue, it must be weaker as regards virtue. And thus the soul, whose will is set upon various trifles, is like water, which, having a place below wherein to empty itself, never rises, and as such a soul has no profit. For this cause the patriarch Jacob compared his son Reuben to water poured out, because in certain sin he had given rein to his desires. And he said, "Thou art poured out like water, grow thou not." As though he had said, "Since thou art poured out like water, as to the desires, thou shalt not grow in virtue." And thus, as hot water, when uncovered, readily loses heat, and as aromatic spices, when they are unwrapped, gradually lose the fragrance and the strength of their perfume, even so the soul that is not recollected in one single desire for God loses heat and vigor in its virtue. This was well understood by David when he said, speaking with God, "I will keep my strength for thee," that is, concentrating the strength of my desires upon thee alone. And the desires weaken the virtue of the soul, because they are to it like the shoots that grow about a tree, and take away its virtue, so that it cannot bring forth so much fruit. And of such souls as these says the Lord, "Woe to them that in those days are with child, and to them that give suck." This being with child and giving suck is understood with respect to the desires, which, if they be not pruned, will ever be taking more virtue from the soul, and will grow to the harm of the soul, like the shoots upon the tree. Wherefore our Lord counsels us, saying, "Have your loins girt about," the loins signifying here the desires. And indeed, they are also like leeches, which are ever sucking the blood from the veins. for thus the preacher terms them when he says, the leechers are the daughters, that is, the desires, saying ever, Dhaka, Dhaka. From this it is clear that the desires bring no good to the soul, but rather take from it that which it has. And if mortify them not, they will not cease till they have wrought in it that which the children of the viper are said to work in their mother, who, as they are growing within her womb, consume her and kill her, and they themselves remain alive at her cost. Just so, the desires that are not mortified grow to such a point that they will kill the soul with respect to God, because it has not first killed them, and they alone live in it. Wherefore the preacher says, and even though they reach not this point, it is very petitious to consider how the desires that live in this poor soul treat it, how unhappy it is with regard to itself, how dry with respect to its neighbors, and how weary and slothful with respect to the things of God. For there is no evil humor that makes it as wearisome and difficult for a sick man to walk, or gives him a distaste for eating comparable to the weariness and distaste for following virtue, which is given to a soul by desire for creatures. And thus the reason why many souls have no diligence and eagerness to gain virtue is, as a rule, that they have desires and affections which are not pure and are not fixed upon God. Chapter 11, wherein it is proved necessary that the soul that would attain to divine union should be free from desire, however slight they be. I expect that for a long time the reader has been wishing to ask whether it be necessary, in order to attain to this highest state of perfection, to undergo first of all total mortification in all of the desires, great or small, or if it will suffice to mortify some of them and to leave others, those at least which seem of little moment. For it appears to be a severe and most difficult thing for the soul to be able to attain to such purity and detachment that it has no will and affection for anything. To this I reply, first, that it is true that all desires are not equally hurtful, nor do they all equally embarrass the soul. I am speaking of those that are voluntary, for the natural desires hinder the soul little, if at all, from attaining to union, when they are not consented, nor pass beyond the first movements. I mean all those wherein the rational will has had no part, whether at first or afterward. And to take away these, that is, to mortify them wholly in this life, is impossible. And these hinder not the soul in such a way as to prevent its attainment to divine union, even though they be not, as I say, wholly mortified. For the natural man may well have them, and yet the soul may be quite free from them according to the rational spirit. For it will sometimes come to pass that the soul will be in full union of the prayer of quiet in the will at the very time when these desires are dwelling in the sensual part of the soul. And yet the higher part, which is in prayer, will have nothing to do with them. But all the other voluntary desires, whether they be of mortal sin, which are the gravest, or of venial sin, which are less grave, or whether they be only imperfections, which are the least grave of all, must be driven away every one, and the soul must be free from them all, howsoever slight they be, if it is to come to this complete union. And the reason is that the state of this divine union consists in the soul's total transformation according to the will, in the will of God, so that there may be naught in the soul that is contrary to the will of God, but that in all and through all its movement may be that of the will of God alone. It is for this reason that we say of this state that it is the making of two wills into one, namely, into the will of God, which will of God is likewise the will of the soul. For if this soul desired any imperfections that God wills not, there would not be made one will of God, since the soul would have a will for that which God has not. It is clear, then, that for the soul to come to unite itself perfectly with God through love and will, it must first be free from all desire of the will, howsoever slight. That is, that it must not intentionally and knowingly consent with the will to imperfections, and it must have power and liberty to be able not so to consent intentionally. I say knowingly, because unintentionally and unknowingly, or without having the power to do otherwise, it may well fall into imperfections and venial sins, and into the natural desires whereof we have spoken. For of such sins as these, which are not voluntary and superpetitious, it is written that the just man shall fall 7 times in the day, and shall rise up again. But of the voluntary desires, which, though they be very small things, are, as I have said, intentional venial sins, any one that is not conquered suffices to impede union. I mean, if this habit be not mortified, for sometimes certain acts of different desires have not as much power when the habits are mortified. Still, the soul will attain to the stage of not having even these, for they likewise proceed from a habit of imperfection. But some habits of voluntary imperfections, which are never completely conquered, prevent not only the attainment of divine union, but also progress in perfection.